Hello, I'm Alex Saviuk here at Supernova, and you are listening to Behind the Panels.
My spider senses are starting to tingle.
Just hang on to your lariat.
Wonder what kind of a scene I'm getting into.
And welcome to issue 96 of Behind the Panels, the comic book show that has action as its reward. I'm Richard Gray.
I'm David McVeigh.
Dave Longo.
I'm Nicholas McVeigh.
Hey! In this issue, the Eisner Award nominees are announced for the year and Grant Morrison's Multiversity finally arrives. Then it's Sinestro, Hulk, Genesis, Translucid, and the end of Superior Spider-Man in what we've been reading. Plus, we go to the movies for our incredibly kick-ass pick of the week. Maybe not so much. The Amazing Spider-Man 2. This is Behind the Panels.
Where are you coming from, Spider-Man? Nobody knows who you are. Spider-Man, where are you coming from, Spider-Man? Nobody knows who you are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I wish I didn't know who Spider-Man was this
well,
week.
Well, not this week.
let's just preempt our review later for later in the show by saying not so amazing.
Not really, no.
No, not really. But not amazing at all.
But yeah, here we are. We've got an interloper in here.
We do. Very rarely in panels do we actually have a fourth. We have had a fourth occasionally here and there. But
it's always
fourth.
Good to have a fourth.
It's always good to
I'm
have
number
a fourth.
Four.
You're number four.
I guess that would make you number two.
I'd like to point out that I'm number one.
That's
on the
a very
board.
Obscure.
That's true.
That's true.
I'm definitely there. Look, we've got a lot to cover this show. We've been off for 2 weeks. We're back.
We are.
Yep.
We won't cover everything that came out last week, but we'll cover a couple of them because we'll cover.
We're actually
bit.
Only technically off 1 week, though.
Yeah, but it's been 2 weeks.
It's
since
been
it's been
two
a show.
Weeks.
You know, it is the Easter long weekend, so anything goes. We're hopped up on chocolate.
That's right, people.
Oh, I just made a pun. I didn't realize. Hopped up.
That's right, people. We're actually recording a show
because
on
of the
Easter.
Rabbits.
And Richard won't be back next week.
No. Do you want to practice now quickly? Welcome to issue 97.
With our special guest, returning co-host Richard Gray.
I'm Electro. why don't we, just because this is the last time I'm going to be on evidently, just for old time's sake, let's do a little bit of a vintage clip of the week. What do you
cool.
reckon?
Rita, would you get me the files on last year's garbage strike, please? Hello, Parker.
Hi, Mr. Jameson.
I suppose you're here to sell me some exclusive photos on Spider-Man in action.
Well, no, I saw that on television, too. I'm sorry about that, sir.
Come on, boss. You can't expect Pete to get every photo of Spider-Man.
Oh, I can't, kid. Why else do you suppose I've got him on the payroll?
Now, that's not fair. Pete does a good job every time you send him out.
Which isn't nearly as often as I'd like, sir.
Keep out of this, will you, Parker?
It's true, you never put them on the big stories.
If I'd have wanted a partner to help me make decisions here, I'd have gotten one 30 years ago.
Mr. Jameson, I have an idea for a story that I think you'll really like.
You have an idea for a story?
Yes, now I'm sure you're really going to like this.
Not now, but can't you see that I'm busy?
Oh, man.
You know, Rita, you really shouldn't talk to him like that. He could have you fired.
He wouldn't dare.
Oh, yes, he would. And he will, too, if you make him mad enough. And he has some very important friends that could make it very difficult for you to get another job.
Oh, yeah? Well, I got some friends, too, that could make it very difficult for him to keep the tires on his rolls, if you know what I mean.
Rita, you are terrific.
Boy, racial stereotype. Yeah.
I love that. Oh, boy, Rita, you are terrific.
I got some friends, too, that could get the tires off his road.
You don't send me out nearly enough, JJ.
Fun fact. Yeah. Nicholas Hammond now lives in Australia.
He does. Yeah, and really. Other fun fact, Sound of Music.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. One of the Von Trapp kids. I, as a child,
was he Hans?
I don't remember. As a child, I was obsessed by that TV series. I
thought what? Sound of Music?
No. The Amazing Spider-Man. I thought it was the greatest.
Oh, is that
ever.
From the 1970s? Yeah,
that was actually from one. It was actually one of the movies they did. That was Spider-Man Strikes Back.
Well, which was just two episodes of the TV series.
Strikes Back.
I saw one episode, I think.
They took the first two episodes, turned that into a movie that was released overseas.
Right.
They took the two episodes, turned it into the Dragon's Challenge.
That's right. I remember
where he went to Hong Kong. And then they also took two episodes of Made Strikes Back.
And so that was the crossover with Shaft, right?
that was that, yeah.
They all were.
Damn you, Jack.
And was it you that was telling me that there was actually an interview with Stan Lee where he was talking about 70s TV stuff?
And it doesn't work.
He said this one just didn't work.
It didn't work, yeah. Because he was quite pleased with Doctor Strange. He said that was one of the better things they did.
And the Hulk was pretty good, too.
And the Hulk, he was quite pleased with it. He said the Hulk, Doctor Strange work, Spider-Man, not so much. Spider-Man, Captain America, not so much.
Not so much.
So that was back. That was another sequel to a Spider-Man film that didn't work. We'll be talking about another sequel to a Spider-Man film that didn't work. But before we do that...
Oh, well played, sir.
Thank you. I'm here till the end of the public holiday.
We're
going to catch
the spider.
Why don't we talk about the other things, what we've been reading?
Where? Looks like we got ourselves a reader. Read between the lines, bitch.
Oh, and boy, did we read between those lines.
Just quickly, hey, that's the wasn't theme it of good the to hear the Spider-Man theme?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the Spider-Man theme that was actually good.
That was actually the good Spider-Man movie. Thing.
Yeah.
That was the good Spider-Man movie.
That was Danny Elfman. Oompa, oompa, oompa.
As opposed to what?
Like, the dubstep.
All right, people, calm down. All right. I know it's been 2 weeks.
I can't wait to talk about Sally Field.
The flying
you
nun.
You love me.
Now she's in the hospital.
I liked her. I really liked her.
I actually liked her too.
Superior Spider-Man 31 came out this week, which was the end of the Superior Spider-Man run. That was...
Was it the end?
This is the end.
This is my only
friend. The end. We cast ourselves back 31 months, and we were complaining like hell about this book. It's probably been less than 31 months.
A little bit less because they went bi-weekly.
Because they do like fortnightly.
That's right. They did because we couldn't wait to get rid of.
At one point
we were like, let's just get rid of this thing because you know this is a stupid idea. This is what we originally said way back when. We hated this idea.
Oh, and I remember when it first started up, we actually said, it'll be about 6 or 7 issues, and then Spider-Man will be back. Peter Parker will be back. Not a problem. Let's just get through this.
31 issues.
Then Dan Slott went on the attack and basically said that no, we're really killing Parker off. This is the way it is. This is the status quo. He actually killed off the internal Parker as well with that.
That's
one
when
issue.
I stopped reading.
And that's when Nicholas said, I'm out. I'm done. Yeah, this
but we
is
always
stupid.
Knew Parker was going to come back, and he did last month. We've already spoiled this before, so who cares?
I called it when the new movie was going to come out. He was going to come back.
That's the thing. They can't not have a Spider-Man book with Peter Parker in it when the movie's out.
Absolutely.
Right? Mm. So he's back. So at the end of this month, The Amazing Spider-Man number one will come out again.
Which I have a little card for over there.
Yeah, right. But the thing is, this I ended up, because I ended up binge reading these in the last couple of weeks, and I actually love the series. I'm going to miss the dynamic of Doc Ock, and they've got all these loose threads now that Park is now going to have to wrap up.
Because I think the issue was never with Dan Slott's writing. Dan Slott is actually a really good writer. I thought the character was really interesting. I think it was the entire idea of it that we were really pissed off at. Once we knew there was an end game in place, once we knew that Parker was coming back.
There was always an end game.
Yeah, but we didn't know how long it was going to be. We didn't know how long it was going to be, and I was just really annoyed by the whole thing. But once we knew that, it's going to be 31 issues, there is a point to all of this, that we've all started reading. Well, I've started reading. You guys have finished it.
Yeah.
And I can read it just for the writing.
It's very well written,
Yeah, and Dan Slott knows how to write a roller coaster, man. Ooh. This thing has got loops and corkscrews, and by the end of it, you're just... Your head's spinning and it's...
By the end, it actually was kind of an interesting little tale.
Yeah, I mean, you as a massive Spider-Man fan...
Yeah.
If you can walk away from it and go... I actually kind of like the story.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Well, so. Once that it's going to be back to normal eventually,
You can take it for the
journey. Enjoy the ride. Look, a couple of other ones that came out this week that I'll talk about quickly. Because you may not have had a chance to read them yet. Sinestro number one came out, which
I read
Sinestro
number one.
Oh, you did read it. Excellent.
Yep, I read Sinestro number one.
So I actually quite liked it because it's kind of like the same thing that Magneto did. He's kind of like a broken man now.
Well, I will say one thing though. I feel like I've read it before.
Yes.
I feel like I have seen this story before because during all
DC doing something unoriginal.
pre-52 War of the Colors and everything like that, we saw Sinestro kind of broken like this before, and we saw him kind of lose control of his core once before and so forth. So I kind of feel like we've done all this before, but the writing is good. The artwork is gorgeous.
I point out, Sinestro number one was written by Cullen Bunn. You know who's writing the Magneto series?
Cullen Bunn. There you go.
Basically the same villains. Story. It's like
he likes the broken men.
He's sandwiched his broken men between two buns.
So he just changes the names and hands the same scripts.
Yeah.
Sinestro puts metals. No, we can't do that.
What I like about this, though, is I like the fact that Sinestro has kind of come to the conclusion that Green Lantern Corps is more powerful.
Yeah.
Because at one point he actually says, oh, well, let's stop fighting it. Let's just leave that for the Green Lantern Corps.
Yeah. But it's also a big middle finger to the Green Lantern Corps, yeah. Saying, look, you know, you want to clean up the universe, you go ahead.
Yeah, we're going to do
our own stuff going on. So, look, I mean, it's worth a read. And if you like the whole Green Lantern universe, you're going to enjoy this.
And Sinestro has always been a really intriguing character.
I find him more interesting as a dynamic playing against Hal Jordan.
Yeah.
Which is why I always find villain books difficult to get into, because by them, which is why we'll talk about it more when we talk about Amazing Spider-Man 2. But the plans for a Sinister Six film
sounds stupid.
It is. I mean, like why have six villains and they can only have one hero?
Yeah.
Because contractually, Sony only have the rights.
Yeah, but they're talking about doing six villains without a hero.
Yeah, yeah, I know. Exactly.
That's what boggles my mind.
It could be a good heist film or something.
Yeah, that would be, if it was a heist film, they did it in that
way.
If they did
something along the lines of the superior foes of Spider-Man,
yeah.
You might be
like GTA 5 with like the Sinister Six. That's what I want to say.
Yeah.
That'd be a hell of a game.
What if it was just them killing people? For
2 hours of killing people.
Yeah. Well, who would win in a fight? Vulture or Doc Ock?
You mean 2 hours of carnage? Thank you. Moving right along, a book that came out this week that really surprised me from Boom Studios was Translucid number one. This is kind of a riff on the Batman Joker dynamic, because there's this character called the Horse comes out of jail, and he's kind of like this crime lord that wears a horse's head. and you take away that he's actually a really sinister character, but he comes out of jail, gets his crew, the three horsemen, together, and says to them, I think the navigator, who's the city's hero, has lost his moral compass, and I need to prove to him that I need to get him back on the straight and narrow, which is similar to something that the Joker was doing in The Death of the Family.
Oh, yeah.
But it's a whole series based around this concept, and it's the horse is basically our hero trying to reteach the hero how to be, you know, get his moral compass back.
Why am I getting shades of the Joss Whedon Dr. Horrible here? Wasn't the
I know oh, yeah,
what the, wasn't the head wasn't the head mobster yeah, known as the horse?
Yeah, oh, there you go. But a really, really interesting concept, and I urge you to check it out. Another two that came out this week.
Bad Stallion.
Oh, yeah, Bad Stallion, yeah.
Another two that came out this week that I would have missed otherwise, and one of them I just found in my local Sydney comic book store, was Star Mage number one, and this is being solicited as a cross between Harry Potter and The Last Starfighter.
Right.
And it really is. It's about this kid and his dad goes to space on a mission. And just as an astronaut, the ship disappears. He's a kid that's being beat up at school. Suddenly, is imbued with these star powers. It's got a vibe of it is really.
It sounds great. I want to read this.
Really a mashup of those two concepts, and you really just get the origin story here. But it's really, really cool. But the one that surprised the hell out of me, and I just picked this up off the shelf in a local comic book store, was called Genesis, and this is by Nathan Edmondson, who you will have seen around on a few things. I think he's doing Punisher. This is from Image Comics. This is this guy who's, when he was young, he just had the ability to create things with his mind, and then was told that his parents encouraged him that he could do anything, you could change the world. And he grows up, forgets about his powers, and becomes an architect or something, realizes that one man, he can't change the world, is incredibly disappointed, tries to kill himself, fails, but when he wakes up, he's got these powers again, and he sets about actually changing the world with his mind and becomes this messiah figure.
Hmm.
This is all a one-shot, like, extended graphic novel.
It's a lot to pack into one book.
It's a 64-page one book. Okay. So it's a really, really nice little prestige format that I think I'd like to see Image doing more of these.
And what's it called again, sorry?
Genesis.
Genesis, okay.
It's really, really good. Just came out this week. Go check it out. I really enjoyed it because it surprised me. I just picked it up for the art and the story looked interesting and it wasn't much more expensive than a regular issue. So I thought, I'll give this a go and I loved it. So,
right.
Which is all the sorts of things you can find in your local comic book store. That's the beauty of
serendipity. Support the comic book stores.
Woo! Comic book stores, yeah.
Digital.
Well, the rest of these I all read on
digital. Who reads digital?
Well, the rest of them. Hulk number one came out this week, which was by Mark Waid. And I thought, well, he wrote the other Hulk series that was out.
He did, yeah.
And I'm enjoying his Daredevil stuff. So I thought I'd give this a go. This is really good. The concept of this is great because it opens with, and the previous series must have finished with Bruce Banner getting shot in the back of the head, and this is them performing surgery on him. And they explain that it had to be two precise shots to the back of the head that would not kill him, but it wouldn't activate the beast either. And it's kind of, and it's Coulson and Maria Hill talking about it, and there's this whole sort of thing going on there. But long story short is that the Hulk is unleashed. But he's still missing the back of his head because they've been doing the surgery on him. So you've got Hulk running around missing
just
his back
put
of
the
his
purple
head.
Purple pants in there.
Yeah, and look, this is a massive spoiler for the end of this issue. So close your ears for about 30 seconds if you don't want to hear the spoiler. But at the very end of the issue, they find Bruce Banner, and because he's been running around with his brain hanging out the half of his head, he's lost all of his intelligence. And so the setup for this series is based, and he's just trying to draw A, B, and C on a wall,
which is the polar opposite to the last series, which was he was using his brain.
Intelligence. Yeah. So this is a really interesting concept. So if this is the premise upon which this new thing, you've got this super, and they were basically trying to implant his brain with a trigger that could have, like they can turn the Hulk on and off whenever they want
to.
So I really like the concept of this. Things I don't like the concept of, Batman number 30 and Batman Eternal number 2. These are both books that came out. You started reading Batman Eternal last week. And the first thing I remember, because we were meeting up that day and you had texted me saying, oh, I'll start reading Batman Eternal. Mm. 30 seconds later, you're like, oh, a wall of text.
Yeah.
You know? And it really is.
This just seems like Jim Gordon is the bad guy for a few issues, and then something else is going to happen.
Yeah, this is kind of like this is like Bruce Wayne Fugitive, but with
I'm not going to read anymore of it.
But with
on
Jim
the flip
Gordon.
Side of that, though, I read Batman 30,
yeah,
which I actually quite enjoyed, and I haven't liked any of the 0 years.
This is kind of like where 0 years should have got to a lot quicker.
Yeah, absolutely, this is what 0 years should have just been this because.
This is actually the 0 year.
Yeah,
now.
This is, and it says this is the final act.
They said, welcome to the 0 year.
That's right. This is welcome to the 0 year, final act. I don't know how many issues this is going to be for this arc, but did you read 30?
No, I haven't yet.
So basically,
I dread it.
Well, no, so basically, Bruce Wayne wakes up with a drip in his nose, and he's been asleep basically for about 6 months. Or more, and he's just in somebody's house. They found him, and they've been nursing him, basically, while he's been in this coma. When he looks out the window, Gotham is just basically overrun in greenery, and the Riddler has just taken over.
So this is the start of the Savage City
The
arc.
Savage City. So and basically, the Riddler has taken over the whole city, and every day he poses a challenge to the people of Gotham, because what he's saying is he wants them to be intelligent. So he's saying, you give me a riddle that I can't answer, and he leaves.
And he's become like this kind of megalomaniacal Jesus, overlord of the city. And like, you know,
yeah,
he's
like
really
Big Brother overlooking everything.
Everything,
you know?
Yeah. And Jim Gordon's got this like little suicide squad that he's running.
Yeah, this little rebellion going. And it's just a really intriguing start to this. Now, I don't know how long
megalomaniacal.
They can, I don't know how long they can milk this for. And knowing DC, it'll probably be 6 months. Yeah. But
I think it's got to wrap up by the time the whole.
Well, Forever Evil's wrapping
okay.
up.
Final act,
6 months later.
I have the riddle that will stump him.
Yeah.
If I choose not to read any more 0 year and just wait till it's over, will I miss anything?
No.
Yeah.
If zero year fell in the woods. The other actually,
what's the sound of one hand clapping?
You actually mentioned Forever Evil. There was a Justice League issue that came out this week as well.
Which
and
I haven't
was,
got to yet.
That was
Metalman. Yeah.
It's another Metalman issue. So definitely, because we enjoyed the last Metalman issue.
I love Metalman, yeah.
This is just as good. This is really good. And there's a whole... there's a great gag with cyborgs there. They're going, is he the future? Kind of half man, half metal man? What's going on with that?
Can I just throw out something else that I read this week? Things that we're talking about DC. Mm-hmm. I read the latest Supergirl, which came out this week.
Oh, yeah.
Which she's a Red Lantern, of course, we know.
Yeah, I heard that.
And it's, you know, it's an okay issue, nothing special. Supergirl kind of hasn't gone anywhere for the last 4 or 5 issues. But it did raise the question as to why I hate crossovers and why I just I'm getting more and more frustrated with crossovers because I don't read Red Lanterns anymore. I was reading Red Lanterns, but I don't read it anymore because it bores me now, okay? So here's Supergirl, which is a comic book that I am reading every week. She becomes a Red Lantern. She shows up in last issue. She's snarling Red Lantern. Anybody read Red Lantern, you know they're all kind of mindless and they kind of spit blood and all this sort of stuff. And everybody's like, oh my God, a Kryptonian where the Red Lantern ring is the worst thing. It's like a world-ending event, you know, and all this sort of stuff. And she ends up being tricked by her friend Siobhan, if you've ever read it, to basically leave the planet, saying that's where your enemy is. And so she flies off.
Look, over there, three-headed monkey.
Basically.
Sorry.
And you go, okay, that's where it is. This issue starts with her completely in charge of her faculties. She's a member of the Red Lantern team. They're out there. They're stopping bad guys on planets. And she's just Kara in a Red Lantern gear. And you go, what happened? I feel like I've missed three issues.
Well,
you know?
Probably did.
Which I did because of goddamn crossovers.
They probably never published them.
And the thing is, they don't even tell you, though. Like in the old days, it would have said, see, Red Lanterns, issue, whatever. They don't even tell you that anymore.
It's the list, isn't it? You're going to find the list. Yeah.
And it just bugged the hell out of me. It actually almost made me think, I don't want to read Supergirl.
I thought the whole purpose of the New 52 was so readers can access it.
Good point.
Exactly it. You can jump on at any point.
I thought that was the whole point of it.
But the thing is,
don't you guys read the Channel 52 news?
Have you noticed, speaking of which, did you notice in Arrow this week, I noticed that when
I
we were playing...
I avoid the Channel 52 news.
Well, no, you don't, because in Arrow this week, and which I know you've watched, there was the news that they're watching was Channel 52 news.
Yeah.
Actually, that's a really good point Nicholas raises, but is anybody just as likely to jump aboard on issue 30 now?
Like, no,
I mean,
not
who's jumping on? Except, yeah. Do you know, apparently Batman was the only book to cross 100,000 copies sold last month, I think.
Wow.
Yeah.
From the days where they used to sell millions.
Yeah.
You know, that's like, oh, man.
So that's messed up, man.
Anyway, so I just thought I'd throw that out there as a grievance. And it's not DC alone. Marvel does this as well. It is actually just a comic book trend at the moment. This whole idea of interweaving comic books. And it's starting to irritate
Marvel
me a little
started
bit.
It, didn't it?
Oh, Marvel
Civil War.
Look, let's
stuff.
Be realistic. I mean, comic book crossovers have been happening for years.
Absolutely.
It's simple economics.
Yeah,
it's
no, but,
it happened back in Claremont's day,
agreed,
right?
Agreed.
So, but the
but they do so many now.
But you know what? The difference is, one of the things that we used to bag on about, I used to bag on about with the older comic books is the roundups at the beginning where they'd say, you know, what we've really been doing over the last couple of weeks. But now I kind of understand why they used to do that, because
the thing is,
don't do that anymore.
The thing is, though, because of the reasons I just said, the only book that crossed 100,000 was, they have to like keep the audience as much as they possibly can. It seems like we will, you know, fans will buy it. We were talking about variant covers before the show. You know, I will buy variant covers for the main ones I've been collecting for years, like Green Arrow or Guardians or whatever. I will buy the variant covers for that. I am that audience, right? Mm-hmm. I am the print target audience, but I won't be there forever. And there are several series that I'm dropping out of because the whole reason I stopped reading comics in the mid-90s was because they got really excessive with the crossovers and variants, and it was ridiculous. I will quickly mention a couple of the books that came out this week because we're running out of time. Harley Quinn number 5 came out.
Loved it.
Still an amazing book. So much fun. Cyborg.
Oh, I love Cyborg, that character.
Cyborg.
I love him putting the cable across and then wheeling his entire wheelchair across.
Yeah. Love this book, of course. And Chad Harden's art is sort of like reminiscent of
it's Amanda
Connor.
Connor's light.
Yeah.
And it's fantastic.
And a couple of books that came out last week, I just quickly mentioned the three new Marvel releases. The three new Marvel releases were all new Dupe number 1. Now, this is the character from Ecstatics. It's actually a lot of fun. It's a silly book. It's very fourth wall breaking, self-referential. Dupe is literally traveling behind the panels of the book, and that is a lot of fun. He ends up proposing to Kitty Pryde. It's a very strange but very fun book. I don't know. I see it more as a mini series than an ongoing, but you know, I'll keep reading it. Nightcrawler number 1 came out, which was the return of both Nightcrawler and Chris
Claremont.
You guys
inspired him.
Yeah, we did. We had him on the show, and he's like, you know, I really need to write a book now so I can come back and talk to these boys.
behind the scenes, guys, that's David and Richard's favorite comic, Nightcrawler.
Nightcrawler
favorite
yeah.
character ever.
No, just the writers.
They suggested to Claremont when they interviewed him, you can hear it.
No, we really want another Wolverine title.
Yeah, because he loves Wolverine. Yeah,
yeah. I thought that's his favorite character.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
He never wanted to kill him off.
Go back and listen to our interview.
let's teleport out of this section.
exactly right.
Banff. Yeah.
We're bamfing out. Other one, Iron Fist, The Living Weapon. Obviously, they've rebooted this in anticipation of the series next year. Yeah. It's worth a read because it actually goes back and tells a little bit of the origin story as well, because he's being into...
Shang-Chi.
Yeah, he's a really cocky kind of guy. Like, he's talking about, you know, I could these reporters, you know, I could have any of them. And yeah, he's just kind of... being you know, your quintessential billionaire sort of character, and he's got this like 20-something-year-old blonde reporter interviewing him who will do anything for him.
This sounds like Tony Stark.
Yeah, exactly. I think they're trying to make him a bit of a Tony Starkish kind of character to make him more appealing. So who knows? Maybe Marvel's trying to set up that character as the kind of playboy for the second half of their...
Could be.
Who knows?
Could be.
Look, next week we've got a bunch of big ones coming out. Original Sin, number zero, kicks off the next big Marvel event, which
Isn't
is the Who
the
Killed...
the Watcher dies?
Yes, yeah. Who Killed the Watcher. They find the Watcher dead. Who could have killed the Watcher? Well, we won't know.
I feel that Nova series. Will be playing a large part
yes,
in this.
I think Nova's there over Watcher's body going, no!
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 Well, interesting one that'll come out next week is Conan the Avenger, number one.
What?
That's right, Conan the Barbarian joins the event. No, no, this is a Dark Horse. Avengers assemble.
Grom!
And it comes to Grom! Sphere of the Trebly, the Lamentations of the Women.
The Wheel of Pain.
We've also got Batman Eternal number 3. I'm going to stop mentioning that because it comes out every week. Justice League United number 0. This is what was originally going to be Justice League Canada.
Right,
this
right.
is Jeff Lemire's book that will
I'm
replace.
I'm curious to give it a look.
Yeah, and this is what's replacing Justice League, the other one, Justice League of America, I
of
think.
Of America,
yeah.
Yeah.
Secret Origins. I don't know if it's replacing or if it's in addition to. Secret Origins number 1 is an ongoing series that's coming out next week.
Oh, look, IDW's got another license.
IDW has license 24, and they're doing that for next week. Daredevil number 2 comes out. Of course, we're going to read Mark Waid's Daredevil, but also coming out in the same week as Daredevil is Elektra number 1. That's being written by Hayden Blackman. It's got art by the awesome Mike Del Mundo. Oh, so okay. If you've seen his covers, some of his stuff for Hulk, and I think... one of the X-Men titles. What's the one where it's got the guy with all the stuff coming out of his head?
Oh, apparently. It's Legacy. Yeah.
Legacy, X-Men Legacy. He's done some of the art for that. He's done really, really next-level art. Guardians of the Galaxy number 14, also known as Guardians of the Galaxy 100. Technically, it's 101, but they had a crossover with Battle for... What's it?
No,
Battle for Jean Grey. I've just matched up my
I still want to do the math. I still don't think it's 100, though.
No, I don't think so either. But that's what's coming out next week. But we're now sitting about the halfway mark, so let's just quickly move on to some news headlines. The nominees for the 2014 Eisner Awards were announced this week, with Fantagraphics and Image Comics leading the pack. Individual titles receiving the most nominations include Marvel's Hawkeye, Image's Saga, DC Vertigo's The Wake, and Top Shelf's March, Book 1.
DC Comics has announced a third weekly series, Earth 2 World's End. It features a staff of writers that includes Daniel H. Wilson, Tom Taylor, Paul Levitz, Marguerite Bennett, and Mike Johnson.
Grant Morrison's Multiversity series will finally arrive at DC in August with an all-star team of artists that include Chris Sprouse, Carl Story, Ben Oliver, Frank Quietly, Cameron Stewart, and more.
With Teen Titans and Suicide Squad relaunching this year, DC has also announced that Nightwing will trade in the cape for Code as he joins the life of a super spy in Grayson this July.
Oh, don't act so shocked, you phonies! You know how this works. In a few months, some magic amulet will bring him back, or we'll find some alternate dimension.
DC's also confirmed that its digital-first Adventures of Superman series concluded this week with issue 51.
Marvel's Young Avengers series by Kieran Gillen and Jamie McKelvin has won a GLAAD Media Award for Outstanding Comic Book.
I'm glad to hear that. Later this year, Warren Ellis will reboot the Project Superpowers universe for Dynamite as the publisher continues to celebrate its 10th anniversary.
Fox has picked up Mark Millar's Superior for a film adaptation, with regular collaborator Matthew Vaughn producing. That's great news.
And finally, the DC Vertigo series Scalped is heading for the small screen with cable network WGN America developing the Jason Aaron Penn book for television.
Yeah.
That'd be interesting because Scalped is one we've been asked to do before, and we have to do it. It's actually only 60 issues, but it has a beginning, middle, and end. We've done something equivalent that size before, which was Why the Last Man. So I propose that we set a date to do that. And then just read it between
now
and then.
We will talk after the show and set some dates.
That's what we'll do.
Can I just go back to that Mark Millar? I mean, for those who have been following the show, we actually reviewed Superior.
We did.
Which is an which is a superior book. I mean, it's an excellent book.
And we said at the time it would make a fantastic movie.
And we said it would make a fantastic movie. It's only four or five issues. Four issues, I think, isn't it? I can't remember.
It's not many. It's any miniseries.
It is a very tight, concise miniseries that tells just a really wonderful story. And if you do get a chance to read it, go back and have a listen to our show. Or if you can read it, read it. But I think that is perfect film material.
That's all the way back in issue 30.
Wow.
So 66 episodes ago.
It's actually one of my favorite Mark Millars.
There you go. Yeah, no, I agree with that. But one of the things I want to quickly talk about before we move on with Pick of the Week, and we won't spend too much time on this because it's been all over the net for the last week or so. While we were away, Amazon bought Comixology.
I'm not quite sure how I feel about this.
So I'm wondering how this is going to affect it. I mean, it might mean that they improve their software. It might be that the software is not as good if you've used maybe they'll just let them continue running as they are.
It could just be the same. Dave, you're a big digital reader. What do you think of this?
I don't know. It feels a bit strange. Like Amazon has Kindle, right?
Yes.
Maybe it's got to do with that. Like, well, they want to maybe be like...
they might have Kindle exclusives.
Kindle exclusive. They can also use their... What's it called? Their WhisperNet, which is what they use for syncing books over the Kindle. So they might be able to use that for the comic books.
I don't think it's that strange, though. Because it's Comixology is probably doing really well. Amazon figures... You know, we might as well have it. You know.
Get more money.
What's interesting is that Kindle already does carry graphic novels, doesn't it?
It does.
Kindle's been carrying graphic novels for a while, so they're kind of crossing each other over now as well. There is a part of me that really thinks that Amazon will keep it just as status quo.
Absolutely, because I mean, I think the main reason they probably bought it is for content, because Comixology carries 50,000 comics from various publishers across the thing, and it's probably a way for Amazon to start getting some of that coin.
Well, because you think about it. If Amazon wanted to go into the comic book business, they would have to set up all those contracts from scratch. They would have to get all of that material. They'd have to re-encode everything because, let's face it, Comixology is doing it all themselves.
And they've said, look, we've long admired the passion Comixology brings to changing the way we buy and read comics and graphic novels, reading between the lines or the panels. Basically, they're saying that, you know, Comixology has done it for us. Mm. We want Comixology is iTunes for comics. We want in.
Yeah.
You know, we're not going to set it up. We're going to buy. And Amazon's bought stuff before. Amazon's bought shops outright before. So, look, I don't necessarily see it as a bad thing. I think it'll just continue as normal. But it is interesting that in a lot of ways this legitimizes digital comics. It makes it mainstream. Mm. You know,
do you guys think they'll leave the price the same as it is? Or do you reckon
that'll be the big question. I think that's probably the most obvious thing, because maybe they'll be wanting to make back the money they spend on Comixology. You know?
The other question I have is, because there's been a lot of talk at the moment amongst other podcasts and within the news, the geek news circles and so forth, the concept that people are starting to wake up to the fact that you don't actually own anything on Comixology. Mm. It's all basically rental, because if Comixology went out of business, that's it. Can't read them anymore because they are fully DRM'd. Will Amazon do anything about
that? So this is the really interesting question for me is one that Businessweek raised 6 days ago. They said it will be interesting to see how Amazon integrates Comixology into its Kindle Fire tablets and even its new Fire TV box in the years ahead. The company vows it will continue to deliver comics to owners of Apple, Google, and Samsung devices. But Amazon is adept at giving customers specific reasons to buy Kindles. So the bigger question is, will we start seeing Amazon device-specific content coming out, you know, meaning that, you know, that's all, because we get basically everything on our iPads at the moment. We all have iPads here. Will it mean that down the track we're going to have a Amazon Fire or Kindle Fire or something in order to get...
Considering that Comixology was originally a iPad thing that spread out to everything.
But this
else.
I mean, this could be why Amazon has bought this.
Let's also not forget that on iPad, Amazon books have to be bought on the website and then transferred onto your iPads because they don't want to do in-app purchase. Mm-hmm. Comixology's entire business model is about in-app purchase.
And this is the second thing that Business Week also mentions, is that perhaps after you've watched something on Fire TV, it'll give you an opportunity to immediately buy. You just say you've just watched, you know, Amazing Spider-Man too, and you're immediately given the option to then download a whole bunch of comics within the same...
To wash the bad taste out. Sorry.
Yeah. Don't bury the lead, dude.
I'm holding up.
So, but the main thing is, I think it's all about product integration. It's about synergy, David.
Yes.
So that's what it's all about. We have to move on because we have talked way too much.
Anybody out there who knows a little bit, who is more technically minded than us or even more business minded than us, who has comments on this, we'd love to hear from you.
Feedback at Behind the Panel.
Feedback
at behindthepanels.net.
Yes.
We'd love
to hear opinions on the Comixology sale if you want to throw them out there.
But for now, it's time for a thing we do each week. week, we pick something and then we talk about it. And it goes a little something like this.
Well, see how you like this.
What is it, Batman?
Whatever it is, it's awfully funny.
It's the pick of the week.
You know what it is I love about being Spider-Man? Everything.
Peter Parker.
Harry Osborn.
It's been 10 years.
What have you been up to?
I do some web design.
Nice arm.
It's just the wrist. Just on the wrist, buddy.
Peter, you're gonna want to see this.
Oscorp.
And you
under surveillance.
Why?
Isn't that the question of the day?
Nothing is what I thought it was.
I once told you that secrets have a cost. The truth does too.
Yeah, so it sucks. Let's move on.
Yep.
All right, end the show. End the show.
Da, 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 da. And we're out. Now, look,
sorry, I'm slow on the soundboard.
Yeah. If I can just start quickly, because as you know, I wasn't a huge fan of the first film, and I think I'm. And you weren't either, were you, Dave?
I didn't think it was horrible.
No, but I didn't think it was horrible, horrible.
I kind
but
of liked the first
I probably
one.
Liked this the first film the least out of all of us.
Let's just say the first movie was way better than this.
Yeah. But, oh, but the thing is, but I rewatched The Amazing Spider-Man coming into this, like the day before.
Yeah, you're actually excited about it.
And
yeah.
I was excited because I giving it again with the distance of time and distance, I actually really enjoyed what they did with it. And I liked the relationship between Gwen and Peter. I liked that they were actually building towards something, even though I complained at the time that the first film was basically setting them up to knock them down later. But I feel as though the bigger crime in Amazing Spider-Man 2 is that this is basically a giant ad for Spider-Man films that will come out if this one's a success.
But not only is it an ad for Spider-Man films to come, it is an ad for things that are actually... And how do I say this gently, but they are ads for things that are going to be major disappointments if you're fans of the Marvel Universe. As an example, as an example, one of the things that, and this is minor spoilers, but you see it in the trailer, they're basically insinuating in this film that Oscorp are the ones who have made things like Dr. Octopus's tentacles, the wings of the vulture,
it's
and
very
so forth.
Disappointing,
the
though.
Point is that
because Dr. Octopus made his arms.
Well, I was about to say,
he's a genius.
Yeah. What they're doing is they're completely undermining.
He's a superior Spider-Man.
Yeah,
they're completely undermining.
Maybe Gwen made all of the technology.
Yeah.
Plot point.
They're completely undermining the concept that these people are geniuses or supervillains in their own right. Basically, saying they're just a bunch of released convicts who they're going to give powers to.
But it's like, I'm jumping ahead to the end here a little way. It's basically saying that the Spider-Man franchise, they're telling you flat out, we will be pumping out villains factory style until we run out of villains to pump out. This is what we're going to do. We have the one hero and a series of villains. But which is what frustrates me most about this movie is that they seem to be, even though that they've planned this out, that they seem to be wanting to make the Spider-Man universe, and we already know there's going to be Spider-Man 3 and 4, as well as a Sinister Six film, and apparently a couple of other standalone
and possibly
films.
Possibly Venom.
Possibly Venom. Well, they've already said two other standalone films, I think. One of them will presumably be Venom and whoever else is popular that they come across. I don't know. It'll be a Gwen Stacy film or something. I don't know.
Gwen Stacy returns.
Mary Jane. We should preempt this by saying that this is loosely based on the of Gwen Stacy. That very, very, very famous comic book run that has in the title. So
it's a real turning point in his career.
It's very much a turning point.
It's a turning point.
But the thing is, the weird thing about this movie is that they set up the tone of the new... Because let's face it, this was already rebooting something that had only finished 5 years before.
Correct.
And so they set the new tone of this film, which was kind of a little bit 500 Days of Summer, that stuff that Mark Webb does well. That's the thing that I loved about the first film, which was the...
And which is the only thing that really works in the second film.
Yeah, and the interrelationship between the two of them. And then completely changes the tone from the get-go. It becomes a parody of Spider-Man films. And you guys were saying before about the ringtone, you know, the first...
Oh, my God.
Yeah, Peter Parker is introduced with the ringtone from the... The Amazing Spider-Man, the original cartoon series.
I believe you mean this one. Hello.
Exactly that one, David.
That one.
That would have been better.
It was funny at first.
It would have been funny if my soundboard worked.
It goes a little bit something like Spider-Man, Spider-Man, except it's the tune only.
But it was funny at first, though, but then it just kept using it and it wasn't funny anymore.
I know, it was like three or four times throughout the film.
Yeah.
But the problem was that whole tone of that sort of silly self-referentialness perpetuated throughout the whole film to the point where we get a battle. And how did you describe it, Dave? The style of music that the battle was?
Dubstep
battle. You literally have a battle where they're at an electric plant. They have all these columns of electricity.
Just so they
can do like the little levels bouncing and fading.
Isn't it Along Comes the Spider they're playing as well?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like,
it is so dumb. Like, this is a dumb film from the beginning to the end. It's not.
There's a sequence in the film, and we're not trying to spoil, so I don't want to give anything away, but
this is just not the of Gwen Stacy.
No. It's not that. No. This is where I think it's Gwen who actually says, "You need me to come along with you, Peter, because I know this plant." Blah blah blah.
Yeah,
and she's the gigantic button.
Yeah, exactly. So she basically says, "I'm aware of the schematics and the this and the that because I helped design it and so forth." She runs up there, and there's a big button that just says reset.
Yeah. Gwen Stacy in this film.
A padlock, right?
Gwen Stacy in this film has been reduced from super scientist, because she's like meant to be this brilliant person. You know, Peter Parker is second in his class. She's the best person at science ever anywhere.
Yeah.
She's about to go to Oxford. She becomes a cheerleader for most of this film. It's like, oh, Peter's doing something. I'll head down and put myself into danger. You know, which ultimately leads to the
of
Gwen Stacy. Yeah. But you know,
I also love the fact that at one point he webs her hand, you see that in the trailer.
Yeah.
And she
the
just
web's supposed to be so strong, but she cuts it with a knife.
Tensile strength of steel, and she cuts it with a pocket knife.
I know, it's ridiculous. I mean, things like that. But I mean, there's so many internal inconsistencies in this film. I mean, you've got apart from the fact that you've got, you know, for some reason they've just included, to try and keep it a little bit serious, they've got Dennis Leary turning up silently, standing there, you know, whenever he's having a moment. And you kind of got playing through. He's got Dennis Leary standing there. And I kind of, every time it came on the screen, I just kept thinking,
hello. Is it me you're looking for?
Peter's like, yeah, I should fly right now. It was at that moment I realized that, yeah. Throughout the whole film, you've got this Disney popping up silently. I don't know whether there's CGI'd him in.
Well, yeah, it would have been outtakes from the first film.
From the first film, they stuck him in there. But also, let's talk about the casting. The casting for the film was pretty much spot on, except it's really frustrating. Because as I said, Gwen Stacy, Emma Stone's fantastic, but they've just given her such terrible dialogue and like this really bad relationship with Peter, which sort of erodes what they built in the first film. So when you get finally...
But she was so good in the first film.
Yeah, she was amazing in the first
film. And it's like they wanted to rush through and do the death of Gwen Stacy arc. but because they've sort of eroded her character so much, when she finally... towards the end of the film, you don't get...
Dave, you're really quick on that button.
I'm amazing.
You don't get the impact of it because they've eroded her character so much that I don't care what happens to her.
Yeah.
I don't care anyone could come in, which is the fundamental problem of this film, that they have a villain, and it's an okay villain, but they've made Jamie Foxx do this nerd routine for the first, like, 30, 40 minutes of the film. He's basically a nerd minstrel.
Which he can't sell.
No. It's Jamie Foxx with a bad comb over going, pay attention to me, pay attention to me.
You remember my name.
this, and I said this in my review. If you go to behindthepanels.net or therealbits.com, you can read my review for it. But fundamentally, this is the problem with the film itself. The film is Jamie Foxx's character. It is saying, it's comically mismatched at the start of the film, and then spends the rest of the film saying, pay attention to me, which is what the film wants you to do. Just pay. Doesn't matter whether it's good or bad. Just pay attention to me. And that's what you get for the rest of the film. But there's this complete incongruous nature between his nerd character and suddenly he's just like the most. It gets a little bit of electricity, and suddenly he gets a suit from somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Well, not only does he get a suit with the little lightning bolts on it.
He went to the same tailor that did the Spider-Man suit. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just like, yeah, it's like lightning bolts. It's like, you could have believed that maybe they went to like Oscorp to get like the suit, but where the hell did the lightning bolts come from?
Just in case where was that reveal? Yeah. The row of suits? They should have just had the Electro suit sitting
there.
Well,
it's just in case they happen to make an Electro Man.
No, it's exactly the same as Nuclear
Man. No capes.
Electro Man.
He becomes Nuclear Man from Superman 4, The Quest for Peace.
Superman!
Who's born in the heart of the sun, but comes out wearing his costume.
Yeah. You know? Of course. Yeah, of course.
But the thing is, they do this thing and they do this whole arc where there's a final battle between Electro and Spider-Man. And I won't spoil it by saying how it turns out. But then, for some reason, because they're doing this arc that we keep alluding to, they cram in the introduction of another villain.
Which you see in the trailer.
Which you see in the trailer immediately. Like, let's just say who it is. They cram in Goblin immediately afterwards. Right?
Well, it's almost like the filmmaker said, we want to do this particular arc that we've been alluding to. And
are you talking about the of Gwen Stacy?
Yeah, that's right. And so, and it's like,
it's half. It's a bad word.
it's like.
Oh, man, do I want to Gwen Stacy.
it's like they got three quarters of the way through the film and said, do you know what? We really want to do of Gwen Stacy. And they said, but we need a goblin.
Yeah.
So let's just make one.
Let's quickly throw him in.
Yeah, just inject him, da-da-da, boom, flies in. You know? Yeah. There's no build-up to it at all.
And it's such a dumb introduction, too. Yeah.
It's like 10 minutes, and he's just like, oh, I'm the goblin now.
Can I ask a question, though? It's like...
where'd he get the pumpkin bombs from?
Chris Cooper's Norman Osborn.
Yeah. Right?
Chris Cooper's Norman Osborn is like dying of this disease his whole life.
That's right.
Harry Osborn finds
out.
Is told about it. Immediately starts dying.
Well, that's the disease. The disease actually, once its words are spoken.
Yeah. Once you know, it's like in
the
cartoons.
The disease that shall not be named.
It's the equivalent of like, you know, in cartoons when they're running off the edge of a cliff, and as soon as they look down, they start falling.
So it's kind of like we could be doing the. Of Harry Osborn.
Yeah. Oh man, this thing is
It's gold.
It's completely at this point. But
to bring this down to some sort of reality, I watched the film and I sat there going, "This is a film that is thoroughly in need of a through line." It has has no driving plot behind it.
You said it feels like three movies.
It feels like three movies crammed into one.
It feels one movie that finishes and then two other bits of two other movies tacked onto the
end. I'm gonna spoil one thing for the audience right now, which is that all the trailers have had Rhino.
Mm-hmm. They've had the Rhino in there.
Rhino as a major character, and I hate to spoil it for people, but he is as good as a post-credit sequence.
Yeah.
You know, it is literally 2 minutes at the end of the film.
I actually thought he worked in the movie, but they just advertised him so much as being a
big... If they had not mentioned him at all and then just had that
The moment that he appears on screen would have been a kick-ass hero moment.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
the way they did it was just such a... Yeah. And look, let's just say, because we've been pretty negative so far, there are some action sequences in this that are really cool. Yeah. And actually seeing the way Spider-Man moves and whatnot...
His web swinging looks terrific.
Effects are amazing. It gets a little bit computer gamey at some time.
All that stuff you guys complained about, I liked.
Oh, Dave, you are so full of.
I never actually found myself during the entire film. I never actually found myself bored. I sat there watching, going, "Okay, it's Spider-Man. It's doing what."
I was frustrated.
But I was frustrated. Yeah. And at the end of the film, I just kind of Richard comes over to me, and I just went, "Are you as disappointed as I am at this?" And I wasn't even really that eager to see this film anyway. I already knew I was going to be a little bit disappointed by this film. But I was hoping for at least the first one. What I got was a film that, and I'm going to say it, a film that I don't think is as good as Spider-Man 3.
It has a lot of the same problems as Spider-Man 3.
Yeah, I think Spider-Man 3, though, I got more sheer enjoyment out of than I got out of this.
Because, like, with Spider-Man 3, you just had Spider-Man 2, which was, you know,
Spider-Man
amazing.
2 was, for me, is still one of the gold standards.
The other
films.
Spider-Man 2 we're talking about.
The other Spider-Man 2. The Raimi's Spider-Man 2, I still think, is one of the gold standards of superhero films.
Yeah.
And I you look at that and you go, Spider-Man 3 has got amazing special
and
effects.
And guess what?
One villain. Spider-Man 3 has got your three villains, which was a stupid idea. But at least with Spider-Man 3, I felt like they kind of tried to make it cohesive. Whereas this one, it was like, one ends, another one picks up, another one picks up, another one ends, you know? And it was like, they couldn't pull it together. Which is really surprising because of who wrote this. Because this is written by Ortsey and Kurtzman.
And Kurtzman, yeah.
And these guys are the guys who wrote the reboot of Star Trek, and they wrote the first Pirates.
As if this
these
was written,
though. These guys
know
how to structure
but
a
Sony
big
wants
Hollywood
toys,
film.
So they wanted to add more villains.
It's exactly it. And it feels like it was rewritten by committee. Because when you actually look at the trailer, there are scenes in there. Like the little bit we played, Norman Osborn. That was the original meeting of how they met. But then they've actually made Peter turn up to...
And I do a little bit of web design.
Design and all that stuff.
There are a lot of...
That's not in the film.
I actually didn't like the film, but I like the trailer version more of that, that conversation.
Because it makes more sense. It's like, hey, we just ran into each other. Instead, it's like, I'm turning up because I just heard that your parents died.
Your father, who I didn't care anything
about has died. And you know,
for you,
hey,
I've never heard of
him. I've got a dead, possibly dead parent as well. And my parents
I know what you're
uncle,
going through. No, you really don't. You know?
Actually, what I went through was worse. One of my parents died in a plane crash. My Uncle Ben was shot. So I know exactly what you're going through.
I need to make
your
giant
dad,
mind map
your dad,
to figure
you
out.
Yeah. Met,
sorry, what was that, Nicholas?
Your dad you hardly even talk to, but like, you know, I had like an uncle that I really loved and he died and stuff. But
bro.
Like, but you so know what I'm feeling right now.
Bro, feel you, bro.
Feel you. So yes, I don't know. I would say to you, watch it on video.
Basically, my advice is wait for DVD if you're not all Blu-ray.
And if it's the 3D thing you want, the 3D is virtually
not
non-existent.
That good,
it's not that good.
Look, I mean, look, if you're a Spider fan, you're going to go and see this, right? Mm-hmm. And I would normally say just go and support every superhero movie. But this is the kind of movie that comes out and prognosticators of doom start going, superhero genre, it's over. It's over now. You know, no, bad superhero movies are over. What Marvel have done over at Marvel Studios have shown us what a better class of Marvel film can look like. You said it last week,
class
Dave.
Of hero.
Or last time we were on here, Dave. You said there's no excuses for Sony and Fox to be making films. It's bad.
Yeah.
Mm. Like, we've got... you know, we've got the classic
we've
arc.
Got a standard to uphold.
We've got the turning point arc. We've got the of Gwen Stacy, right? we've got that. We know what it looks like in books. We've seen it done. We've seen it done before on screen, right? All they need to do is look at the Spider-Man cartoon from the 90s to see what an adaptation can
be.
Yeah,
you and I talked about this. Okay, the acting in that was kind of cheesy. The animation wasn't going to be
very
90s.
But the stories
but the adaptations
really
were good.
They were good adaptations,
And you sit there and go, if you took those adaptations and turned them into films with better acting and, you know, high production values, you've actually already converted the comic books.
You've done it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And same as the 90s, you were saying, Dave, same with the
90s. Yeah, in the 90s one, like...
X-Men.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely.
All they need to do for the X-Men movies. But no, you get Bryan Singer, who we're going to be talking about a bit this week on GMC.
Yeah, so this is the GMC
this week. And so that's our crossover this week.
Like, for example, like me watching Amazing Spider-Man 2, like this Rise of Electra, I felt embarrassed to be a comic book fan. Like, it just made me feel sick. Like, why have I wasted a lot of this time reading Spider-Man when this is what the public thinks of it?
Can I also point out that, normally we don't talk about our wonderful partners and so forth because they are wonderful for getting us in and everything else. But I have to say, and I'm not going to mention any names, but there was actually a rep there from the company. And even she looked a little bit embarrassed.
I think that was probably more to do. There was a slight delay at the start of the film, and that was probably more to do with that.
I think they got that going, but I think also, I don't think they'd seen the film yet.
We weren't bang on that because it didn't affect our enjoyment of the film at all.
No. The delay, I wasn't going to mention because the delay, that happens. You know what I mean? It's a free preview screening. It happens.
And let's face it, we're leading up to this. It had really bad reviews, but I actually went, as Nicholas said before, I went in kind of still optimistic because I'd rewatched the first film and enjoyed it.
I was optimistic too.
But you're a huge Spider fan.
Yeah, I know, but like I thought it looked pretty good. I was actually hoping because Spider-Man 2 was really good. I was hoping maybe they might be able to make it.
Yeah, second film always sort of breaks out of the origin thing.
And there is no doubt that when it comes out on Blu-ray, I will probably buy it.
You'll buy it in 3D.
I'll buy it in 3D because some of the visual. Well, actually, I may not buy it in 3D
because
3D
you may not know this, but David McVeigh has a 3D television.
But I'll buy it on Blu-ray because some of the visual effects are really amazing to look at, you know, and so forth, and that's fine. But it's just not a particularly good film.
We're going to wrap the section up now. We're basically going to say that. See it if you're a Spider-Man fan because you're going to go and see it.
Otherwise, wait till DVD.
Wait for DVD. Mm-hmm. It's disappointing. Otherwise, David, I'm calling out for a girl right now. Some kind of girl from somewhere.
You mean this one?
Hey, girl. How you doing? We've got a little bit of feedback this week. The first bit of feedback we want to mention is some feedback we got in person. David and I were in Galaxy Bookshop here in the city.
Yes.
A local geek. I'll forget it.
We were in
Galaxy Bookshop this week, and we were buying some stuff. We were looking some stuff there, and I went around the corner to look at some shelves. I was probably looking at some Doctor Who stuff. And I hear this voice talking to David saying, excuse me, are you from podcast? And David's like, yeah, of course I'm from podcast. And David's voice is recognizable instantly. And David said, yeah, actually I am. And I walk up and he's like, oh, you're both here. So, and it was a guy that we'd read out some comments from a few weeks back.
Went, welcome to the Galaxy Bookshop.
Welcome to Galaxy Bookshop. I'm Richard Gray. And you went, I'm David McVeigh. In this conversation, we will be talking about...
David did the quick glance, like, figure out where all the security cameras are. Yeah.
In this conversation, we'll be talking about how good we are, how much you enjoy the show, then. He sent us some comments a couple of weeks ago under the name BadApple93 on iTunes.
Absolutely.
That's one of the places you can leave us comments on iTunes. Please do that.
And now we've met him in person, we can say, Dave, it's a pleasure to meet you.
And he was also the one that said he heard Dave Longo in King's Comics. Mm. Sorry, in local comic book store. And, you know, said he'd like to come up and talk to us. And he said, yep, you said to come up and approach you, so here I am. And it's great.
And here
we were so excited to
get... We talked to him for quite a while, too.
Yeah, and so if you want to send us an email, Dave, because we said we're going to send you out some stuff. The guy's name is Dave Smith. Hello, yep. Dave.
Hey, Dave.
If you want to send us out some stuff, you want to send us an email at feedback@behindthepanels.net, we'll send you out some stickers and badges and whatnot. Because thank you, that really made our day.
It was the best day ever.
I had a big smile on my face.
Oh, so did I. I had a big smile on my face for the rest of that day. We also got an email from our good friend Graham Parker, who contributes to our Facebook page a lot. He sends a lot of things in. He says, under the title German Industrial Heroes, he says, hi guys, wow, not one but two mentions of Einstürz und Neubauten, one of my favourite bands on the Cap 2 podcast. What surprises will the next show bring as a reward for the Neubauten name drop? Here's a link to 1960s Turkish movie called Kilink Istanbul'a, which is a really weird and has a Captain Marvel Shazam character for no reason other than to cross Batman and Superman's costume, it would seem. Keep up the good work. Love both panels and GMC. Graham. Thank you, Graham, for
Thank
that.
You, Graham.
And we should have put some Einstürz und Neubauten on the soundboard. Maybe we'll do that for the next show.
You said that so eloquently.
I did German for 4 years.
Amazing. Yeah, well done.
Yeah, it's my one superpower. Yeah. I remember bits of German. I remember how to say...
That's because he is. Grayson.
Ich wohne in der Nähe von Friedhof, also die Nachbarn sind sehr ruhig.
Put some beeps in there, please.
Which I believe means I live near a cemetery, so the neighbours are very quiet.
I only know two phrases in German.
Don't say that.
Is one of them... Yeah, it probably is.
And the other one would be... Yeah, that's
So that. Thank you so much for your feedback. If you want to leave us feedback, you can do it in three different places. You can go to Facebook. You can go to facebook.com/behindthepanels. Just look up Behind the Panels on Facebook. You can post something on there. You can leave a comment. You can send us a direct message that way. You can go to feedback@behindthepanels.net. That's how you send us an email. And as I said, the one that really helps us out in the iTunes rankings is if you go to iTunes, go to look up Behind the Panels and just leave us a star rating or leave a comment like the one that BadApple93, Dave
Absolutely.
Smith. Hello. And it might lead to something really exciting like meeting us in person. Because that's, I mean, I think every child growing up in this country wants to meet the heroes. And, you know, if we're the heroes of somebody,
you're their heroes.
It's nice. And, I ripped off my shirt and showed my, you know.
I have a panel show.
Post for a few photos.
You were just handing out money that day.
I was just saying, here, have some money. So I just got a nice Medicare rebate. So I was just handing out
the behind
cash.
The panels money.
I was making it rain, brother.
you don't have anything underneath your shirt? You just ripped?
No. I'm actually going commando.
He actually has
most
a symbol shaved into his chest.
Yeah. It's shaved. I have a lot of chest hair. Next week on Behind the Panels, issue 97. We're getting close to that 100 mark, aren't we? Probably should get a guest for 100 or something. We keep talking about it.
We're working on it. They're not responding to us.
Damn you. If you're a famous comic book creator and you're listening to this show,
call us.
Call it now, please. Sooner rather than later.
Call now.
Call now and get
call
an
now.
Exclusive.
We're waiting to take your call. We're sitting here going,
hello. Is it me you're looking for?
Yes, it
I've
is.
Sent,
yes.
I've sent Mark Webb a few emails this week. Maybe I'll send another
Mark
one.
Webb will not come to the show after what we just said.
Your movie sucked, dude.
So, Mark Webb, why'd you have to make that movie?
And he'll be like, you guys. Next week, we're doing more Spider-Man. We're doing Spider-Man Family Business.
As I said, to wash the bad taste out.
To wash the taste, we're doing by Mark Waid, James Robinson, two very good writers. But then again, so were Orky and Doc Kurtzman, so I don't know.
We got the right here.
By Gabriel D'Otto. We're holding it here, but that makes for really bad radio. Gabriel D'Otto and Werther Del Edera. I'm going to have trouble pronouncing that next week. Del Edera. So we're doing that next week. That's an original graphic novel that Marvel has brought out recently. Until then, you can find me on the Twitters at DVDBits. You can find me online at TheRealBits.com. That's TheRELBits.com. Or BehindThePanels.net. David.
You can find me on GeekActually.com, or you can find me here nursing my very sore tooth, which I'm about to go take drugs for. Or you can find me on Twitter at David McVeigh.
You can find me picketing the latest screening of Rise of Electro and at DamnGoodCup.com.
And Nicholas?
You could find me on YouTube, youtube.com/NickyMcVeigh, or you'll find me at Captain America again.
Fantastic. Well, until next week, I'm Richard Gray.
I'm David McVeigh.
I'm Nicholas McVeigh.
And I'm Sally Field's acting ability.
I like you. I really like you. This is Behind the Panels.
Death of Swamp Thing, the most shocking comic book of the year. Now on sale. He's back and better than ever. Swamp Thing number one. Now back to our show.